Hey, everybody, it's Joe Trippi, and welcome back to That Trippi Show. This week, we're actually starting with one of your questions, and it's the most common question we get. Let's look at the state of all the big races, and what's going on in the House? Will Mike Johnson make it to November? We try to make sense of that one, too, although that's a pretty tough one. And should there be a debate about debates? Alex, where should we get started?
Yeah, as we've been recording, the Trump trial is still going, and I'm pretty sure a juror just got kicked off, but I let's leave that for another day.
Sure.
It's a mess.
Yeah, well, it'll be going on for a while, so there'll be plenty of time to talk about it.
It's a mess for him, which I think is relevant to today. But so one of the most common questions we get is people always want you to zoom out and talk about where you see everything. And this is from Marie in Georgia, and thought we could lead with it today because it's probably going to be the bulk of what we talk about. Joe, one of my favorite things about your show is when you zoom out and put everything that's going on into context. With so many polls and so many moving pieces, it's tough to decipher everything. So I guess I am asking for a pulse check. How's President Biden doing? What are his odds? What's going to happen with the House? The Senate. And she goes on, and before, that's a lot, but I think we should just go point by point. We haven't done this in a while. But maybe we start with how Joe Biden's actually doing as president, Joe?
Well, look, I've always thought, and we've said it here on the show, he's doing a great job. You know, the problems, the economy doesn't right itself after the pandemic. That takes a lot. And people aren't going to be happy right away. So, look, there's a lot of things going on, but I think we've said this repeatedly. I'd much rather be us than the Trump campaign right now. I'd much rather be on the pro-democracy side.
Yeah, we'll get to the campaign. We'll get to the campaign. But anything else on his presidency, on what's going well, what he needs from a governance perspective this year to make the reelection a little easier?
Look, we've been saying for quite a while, and I've been saying this, he's had a really good presidency. First 2-3 years, I can't think of anybody who's accomplished as much as he did. 3 huge bills in his first 2 years.
The bills, right. Yeah. They were actually passed. Yeah.
We're seeing the dividends now. And it's like, Donald Trump, the infrastructure week every week that never happened. And Joe Biden got it done with a very, look at how obstructionist the Congress has been. The whole way. I mean, they can't even keep a speaker. And somehow he was able to get 3 huge, huge bipartisan bills through, getting enough Republicans to join. And now you look at what's happening now. Again, the obstruction as we move past, in Ukraine, there's still, he's been leading the coalition who's on the other side with Putin. And we still don't know whether Congress will come together and pass that funding. And, and so there's other things. What needs to happen in Gaza? I guarantee you when a ceasefire comes, it will be because of the diplomacy of Joe Biden and him holding. And we saw this, by the way, with the attack that just happened from Iran with the U.S. military knocking down, I think, 86 missiles or drones of the 350 that came across. And the coalition that did it was not just the British, the Israelis, the US, and France, and including Jordan and Saudi Arabia. That's an incredible coalition in defense of Israel. And so when that ceasefire comes, and it will, again, I think it will be clear that it was predominantly because of the pressure Biden put on and our diplomatic corps put on both sides, not just Israel, but Hamas and Qatar with help from Egypt and others. So that's still out there. But I think even in the end, that will accrue to, again, contrast that with what Trump would be doing right now. There would be no way that it wasn't escalating. That's the thing. Somehow, Joe Biden has calmly led both the NATO coalition and worldwide coalition in response to supporting Ukraine and holding things together by putting pressure on both sides in the Middle East And if you look at it, Ukraine would already be in Putin's hands. And there's no way that this wouldn't have escalated, that Trump wouldn't be escalating the conflict right now in the Middle East. So you got that. And then you have the economic growth. U.S., you know, we're on track to grow at double the rate of any other G7 country this year. And that's, you know, according to IMF forecasts. And, you know, the real problem, it always is, as prices increase. By the way, prices have increased from the beginning of time. They don't go down. They increase every year. You know, there's inflation. Even the Fed aims for holding it at 2% inflation every year. But it's 2% year in, year out. If things are at a steady rate, it's down to 3.5 now. The problem, and way down from the 9, you know, almost 10% it was back in 2022, you know, when gas prices were really soaring and everything was going up. The problem is those prices stick in people's heads, but their wages are increasing. People have more jobs than we've had in the country in decades. And I think you're seeing that in consumer sentiment and other things. And we've talked about that before. So at this point, I think, you know, you couldn't ask for a better job performance out of any president that in recent memory. Biden's has by far been a success.
Well, and so one of the common questions we get is, you know, how do you message that to voters? How do you tell that story? But so zooming back out, we talked about his performance. How do you like his, I don't want to say his chances, but getting back to Marie's question, you know, what does that mean for this fall based on everything you've seen?
Look, this is going to be a good year for Democrats and for Biden. I believe that. I've said it repeatedly. We are, I think, moving towards, you know, I know Simon Rosenberg talks about 55%. I don't think that's real. I mean, first of all, there's only 55% of the country that's even available to Biden and the pro-democracy movement. But I do think we'll end up over 50, 51. Like, you know, Biden got 51 in 2020. I think it's going to end, Joe Biden's going to end up getting between 51 and 53% of the vote. And I think the only threat to that, and we've talked about this too, I mean, the threat to him getting into the 50s is third parties. Because if, you know, if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is out there and some others, and they get 3 or 4 points or 5 points of that 55 that's available to Biden, it could hold him under 50. If they get 7-8% combined, it could put him into the 46-46 race that Trump needs. Right now, though, I think that threat is being knocked down every day. The Kennedy family today, I think 12-15 members came out and endorsed Joe Biden as we're recording this. It, you know, the No Labels is out, and there is a concerted effort now to warn the country about RFK Jr. and the others. So Kara Kennedy was on, I think, MSNBC this morning, may have been CNN. I don't remember where I saw her, but she is very clear that a vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. or any of the third parties was a vote for Trump. And so the more that warning gets out, I think that risk gets diminished. But you've got, you know, the GOP is, you know, keeps helping as it did in 2020. So I think that's clear. They're going to keep doing the crazy stuff. This isn't just happening on its own. Everything keeps coming back to abortion. And that's not happening on its own either, because the crazies in MAGA, you know, they're
the ones doing it.
They just keep bringing it back. You know, just as they think, well, wait, maybe the people have forgotten about IVF in Alabama, Arizona comes in and does a complete ban going back to 1864, you know, with some life of the mother exception. But the thing about that is, even with Carrie Lake and Trump walking away from it, the speaker in Arizona won't even bring a bill up. I mean, he keeps saying, no, we're going to keep, this is going to be the law. 1864 is going to be the law. This stuff just keeps going on. So, you know, you've got all that happening. The thing is that elections always, and we talk about this with Rick and Rick Wilson and Stuart Stevens a lot, it's what turf you're fighting on. It's, you know, elections tend to have their own, you know, center of gravity that, you know, that comes to bear. And, you know, if you're fighting, like, if we're fighting on who's going to raise taxes or, you know, any number of issues.
Right. It's not our turf.
If it's a referendum on the economy right now, with people feeling bad about the economy, even though it's, you know, it's getting better and improving, and particularly after the devastation of a pandemic and shutting down supply chains and all that stuff, that takes time. And it's healed pretty well, and the infrastructure bill's kicking in. All those things are happening. But if it's a referendum on the economy, that's a turf that and the open borders accusations. You know, if it's the Mayorkas impeachment, if it's that kind of stuff, yeah. Which is why they keep pushing that. On the other hand, if this is a real contrast between the chaos, Captain Chaos Trump, and the chaotic...
He'd probably actually like that nickname. I think he probably would like being called Captain
Chaos. Yeah, but that's what we should start calling him, maybe. But anyway, Captain Chaos and the MAGA circus, and just the unbelievable failure to do anything, to accomplish anything, to other than no and siding with Putin and, you know, all the stuff that they're doing, and take freedoms and rights away and go back to... I thought they only wanted to go back to the 1950s, but it's now looking like 1860s is something they're really into.
And although we can go back farther.
We should have saw that. Yeah, coming. But, you know, look, I don't like talking about head-to-head numbers, but even when you just looking at the trends of where all the polling is going, it's improving. Clearly, there's been improvement for Biden and
basically every national poll.
Every single national poll. So, you know, I think that's, you know, and so the trend line is really still clear to me that Trump can't get much better than 45, 46. Biden is starting to show up with numbers in like the 49 range. I think, you know, those numbers are starting to come in again. And I think that contrast is only going to increase as we get closer to the election. His numbers are going to continue to go up. And, you know, and you look at Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, the polls there all look good for Biden. And, you know, and as you and I've talked about it, and we've talked about this a lot, there are polls starting to show that North Carolina's tightening within the margin of error.
Yeah, you called that one.
So... You know, I just think in the end, this is going to be a real... So getting to the rest of your question, though, I think, I definitely think we're taking the House back. I mean, I just don't see any way that doesn't happen. Charlie Cook and a whole bunch of other people, I guess, think differently than that, but I think they're wrong. And then, you know, I mean, I just think the 18 or 17 members now in districts Biden won, the Republican incumbents, I think there's definitely 6, 7, 8 of those that are going to go out, if not a lot more going out the window.
Right. I think people need to understand we don't need to win 15 of those.
Right.
We need to win 4.
4. And there's other things going on, like Alabama, where, you know, we only had one Democratic seat. Now we have the potential for 2 because of the court and redistricting there. The same thing in a couple of other states. So no, I think the House is you know, we got to do the work. They got to keep doing the crazy, as we've been now saying for, I guess, another cycle. But they keep doing the crazy, and we keep doing the work. I think we're going to win those seats. The really fascinating thing, I think, is that the Senate now, which I would not have said from the beginning, I thought, you know, look, we had a shot at keeping the Senate, but really, really tough to do.
Mm-hmm.
That now looks like we could pull it off. You know, even Florida on the Senate side, I'm not there yet on, you know, I think one, the 6-week abortion ban that DeSantis signed, the fact that abortion rights will now be on the ballot in the state of Florida, and what that does seem to be doing, energizing younger voters and women, that, and now with Arizona and Alabama, the IVF and the Arizona ban ruling, that Florida is going to be closer than it was. Just as we talked about North Carolina, Biden only lost it by 74,000 votes in 2020. With the dynamics in North Carolina being what they are, that's going to be closer. Maybe we can pick it up. Polls are showing that. In Florida, I think things could get closer that Biden, if he can hold it within a single digit, within single digits there, makes it a potential for Rick Scott to lose. He's not very popular, the senator, the Republican MAGA senator from Florida. Not popular.
Extremely unpopular, yeah.
And you could see, he was on, I don't remember what Sunday show or what, when he was being interviewed, I don't remember it, but I do remember his reaction when he was asked about the abortion stuff. He just started.
Froze.
Yeah, just froze. Yeah. It started squirming in his chair on air. So look, he is potentially vulnerable. I think Arizona becomes more, you know, Gallegos, it has a better shot now at winning it. You got, you know, all these seats. That the one that's still, I don't know, you know, the one that I, you look at it and, you know, if John Tester wins Montana, which I think is really doable. I mean, there's a, you know, there are things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
well,
I'd say odds are better than not.
Right, exactly.
I agree with that.
You got, you know, the same issues that are working there. And Tester is not a, he's a Montana. He is Montana. I mean, that's just, it's been his calling card from the beginning. They're not going to be able to make him some kind of, you know, crazy AOC kind of Democrat there.
Yeah, they're going to try, but you're right.
I think it's not going to work. So look, I just think when you look at it, we could actually hold the Senate and maybe pick up a seat, which I never in a million years would have predicted that. But that's where the narrative is all going now, I think.
Well, it's not just the narrative. And talking about the Senate before we bit back to the House and Biden for a minute, we're recording the show right after the April 15th disclosure deadline. And that's where you get a real sense of how things are going this year. We've talked about it on the show before, how Republicans have a pretty serious hard money problem. And what that means for our listeners is the most efficient dollar that can be spent on any campaign is from the candidates themselves. Those are obviously capped at $6,600 a year for federal elections, $33,000 for a primary, $33,000 for a general. That money, candidates get better rates on things like television. So your dollar goes farther, which obviously television is still going to be by far what people spend the most money on this year. All of that is to say, when, yeah, okay, you can dump $20 million into a PAC, but really that's like $12 million in terms of what your buying power gets you. And I realize Republicans are still going to rely heavily on that. They're going to have to spend more on it. Because if you look at what just happened in, I think, almost every battleground state, not all of them, Democrats are just killing them in fundraising.
Yeah, no, that's the whole, you know, the whole thing here is not just that the arguments are starting to roll in Democrats' favor, in our favor in these states, but you look at just the Democrats are routing Republicans in fundraising in the Senate. In Ohio, Sherrod Brown raised $12 million to Moreno's $2.1 million. I mean, you know, six times, even in Texas, you know, it's basically tied.
Texas, yeah. They both raised about $10 million.
Yeah, both.
And if you're raising something like Ted Cruz's, and look, we can do shows on Ted Cruz, but I mean, he's always been a very, very prolific fundraiser.
And he's not all that popular either. And then you've got, you know, in Montana, we talked about this. I mean, him, you know, you can't have a better Democratic candidate in Montana than Tester. You know, he's independent, maverick. And he raised $8 million to she's $2.6 million, I think it was. So you got,
but if he's getting outraised four, if Tester's getting outraised 4-1, then okay, yeah, we got problems.
Yeah, it's happening the other way around. You know, Arizona, Gallego, $7.5 million. Lake did pretty good. She raised $4.1 million, but you know.
That's more than I thought she'd
be
able to
raise. Yeah, but she's also now dodging all the abortion stuff. It's just, I think that's going to become, we talk a lot sometimes about the anchors weighing down on Biden. Look, the anchor in Arizona now, this court case, and the speaker and the way the party is fighting to maintain the 1864 law, or at least the speaker is and the rest of the party. You know, Trump keeps saying, let the states decide. Okay, guys, this is what happens. This is what you get. And it's not just the justices of the Arizona Supreme Court, it's the Speaker of the House in Arizona who won't even put the bill to fix it on the floor. So you, and then you got, you know, the Democrat raising, you know, nearly 2-1 over the Republican there. Casey is in a fight in Pennsylvania, but I feel much stronger. I don't think money is going to be the, it's, you'd have to spend a ton more than Casey, given, I think, how strong he is in Pennsylvania and how that Pennsylvania race is coming to the fore for Biden as well. I think that's, I mean, again, same thing. Casey's got to keep doing the work. We got to, everybody's got to keep supporting him, but I don't see that, you know, being a race that I even think is in play right now. Same with Wisconsin, with, you know, Baldwin 5-1 fundraising advantage. So you see all that. That's what I'm saying. So it's not just the abortion fight and that they're on the wrong side of that. It's not just the chaos of, you know, of MAGA and some of the other, you know, crazy stuff that they've been doing and are doing. And Trump, obviously, hanging around their necks, a lot of these people in a lot of these states. You know, Simon also, and I talked about this, is there's now a hard money problem in the Republican Party. They're so dependent now on billionaires writing big checks to dark, you know, to dark money groups and stuff that they have lost. And a lot of the max out kind of, you know, donors have stopped giving. I mean, they're so appalled with where the party's gone that they're really not stepping up. And I think that's causing a real problem for these Republican Senate candidates in particular. And by the way, the same thing's happening in a lot of the House races.
And I do, before we move on, I do want to just go back to one of the House questions. What is going on with Mike Johnson? I do not get it, Joe. It's like, he went to Mar-a-Lago, I think, last Friday and did the whole pilgrimage to Trump and played the hits and talked about election fraud. And then he went on the weekend and told Jake Tapper something along the lines of, we're going to stand for freedom and make sure that Vladimir Putin doesn't march through Europe. Like, what is with this shift and what is he trying to do? And can any of this work?
I don't, not in the long term. I don't think it'll work. I mean, look, he's just trying to hold on to his job, you know, is what he's doing, which is actually kind of sad given the stakes that it took, you know, gave Russia a 6-month advantage, you know, where we could have done something, could have gotten them the weapons and the money that they needed. And he just, you know, couldn't do it. And now he's, you know, he's doing everything he can to stop, you know, the MAGA crowd, which he's part of, which is the real sad part, from cooing him and taking him out, that he may need Democrats to bail him out and keep his speakership. But if he does, I think, you know, by the way, I whatever happens, I just want the funding bills to get done. If he can get that done before he's kicked out the door, that'd be great. But no, he's just, you know, another, you know, mini McCarthy. He's just following the same exact script, going down to Mar-a-Lago, bowing, curtsying, only to get screwed when it all comes down, and it will. You know, and Trump will look the other way and say he was, you know, he wasn't a good speaker or whatever the hell he's going to do. But in the end, it's just another sad case. Not sad. It's just how reckless and incredible. What, you know, we talked about this. I can't remember something we were working on, you know, where the cost of MAGA is just been, and this leadership of both Trump and Mike Johnson have just been so devastatingly costly, not just to the people of Ukraine, but to our democracy, to our standing in the world, to our alliances, you know, our allies, now worried that, maybe Trump's going to come back, or that, yeah, asking the same question, what's with Mike Johnson? Can he pull this off or not? Is Ukraine going to be left in the lurch or not? There's no way in the end he comes out of this with, I think, remaining speaker for very much longer.
I think costly is a good word for it. I would say it's just been deeply weird over and over and over again. The amount of times we've had to kind of reset what, and this is part of the problem, the amount of times we've had to reset what we'd consider normal is just really ridiculous. And, well, and again, that's deeply problematic from the media perspective.
The injecting bleach thing was a little, you know, it hasn't been normalized yet, but, you know, I wouldn't give up on it. They, you know, because right. things that's were so much better point, then. Right. I mean, they were just right. so much right. better, Alex. I mean, you know, so 4 years ago, I mean, it was unbelievable. Bleach sales were through the roof, and the prices were kept pretty low too.
So this kind of gets to the other big question we got, and I'm very curious your take on this, having been through a ton of presidentials. This is from Mark in Vegas. So much of this year isn't normal. I think about things like debates. Should Joe Biden debate Trump? I'm torn. What do you think, Joe?
I agree with Nichols on this, with Tom Nichols on this. You know, that the answer is no. You know, I mean, he said it. If people want to end American democracy by electing Trump, so be it. But we don't need a dog and pony show where Trump is treated like a real candidate who has real ideas instead of what he is, the head of a violent, seditious cult. And I actually think that's a good reason why you shouldn't debate Trump. You know, Trump will be out there doing the whole fear thing, you're afraid. But I think it helps make the case that if you get on the stage with him, you are helping normalize the craziness of his assault on democracy. I would just literally put out that statement. If he wants to end American democracy by, you know, so be it. But I'm not giving him the dog and pony show.
And I bet the media would love that. Very, very sarcastically, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, but I'm just saying, like, no, I mean, you're going to pay a price for not doing it, but I sure as hell wouldn't give that guy. I mean, that first of all, I don't think this is ever going to happen because Trump has already said he is not going to debate.
Right, exactly. Like he's doing the whole like crying about the rules thing and calling it corrupt. And
the Commission on Presidential Debates has sponsored and carried out every series of debates for president that I can remember forever. That's who sets
since the 80s. Yeah.
Since the 80s. So Trump has already said that he will not debate under anything that the commission sponsors. Well, okay, it's the commission that has held every debate since the 80s. Both parties, nominees, have agreed year in and year out to abide by those rules and those, you know, the procedures and the process and enter those debates. But Trump's not going to do it. So if I'm Biden, I'm saying, yeah, happy to do it. I'm doing it, you know, going to agree to the commission to them sponsoring the debates, and I'll be there. Then Trump's either got to cave, which he will not do because they're not going to give him, like, you know, Sean Hannity's not going to be the moderator of the debate. So that's not going to happen. But my point is, I think this is kind of moot. I don't think Trump is going to agree to the commission. And I don't see why any presidential candidate would, and I mean, forget about Joe Biden. I mean, in any year, why you would, sure, we'll debate. And we'll do it outside of the commission that does every debate that's ever been held for you to put up a phony debate platform. And I give you, you know, the ability to do a dog and pony show. No, I'm not going to do that. We're doing it. Let him continue to say, no, he won't debate it.
Joe, we're running out of time, but do want to just flag something for our listeners? It's just really important. There was a report in the Washington Post, there have been a couple of them in the last couple of months, about just how far Russia is going to once again interfere in our elections. And again, I think Simon pointed this out. I'm pretty sure John Harwood said something too. But basically, anytime they mention Russia or Ukraine, the attacks they get online are just so much more both vicious, coordinated. There's a lot more of them. The volume's a lot higher. And at the time, I didn't really think about it because it was kind of a quick story. And I think the Times, which I know they have their own problems, but you know, Russia's out there not just doing things like attacking people online, but they're out there creating these alternative news sites. And I listed a couple of the Miami Chronicle, the New York News Daily, and they're news sites that are they're really subtle. Where everyone's, you know, it might just be they're all designed to make things look pretty bad and drive the fear and, you know, talk about things like rising crimes to fears on immigration. They're literally basically taking Republican talking. Or
yeah,
Trump's
they're
talking
run by remnants of the Prigozhin Empire.
You know, yeah.
Remember him?
How's he doing? Yeah. But the thing about this now that I thought was very interesting was there was a leaked Kremlin internal document as a Russian intelligence thing. The whole thing's really interesting. I think we'll probably include it this week. By the way, in that document, which I know we were talking about Ukraine earlier, but they literally say like they view the Ukraine conflict as the established, like whoever wins is going to come out on top in this establishment of a new world order. But they said literally in the document, it's important to create a mechanism for finding the vulnerable points of their internal and external policies with the aim of developing practical steps to weaken Russia's opponents. What that means and the rest of it, you just have to pull out one document. But there is a game plan, a memo in Russia. It is very official. It is like sponsored at the very highest levels. Like this is their whole plan.
Yeah. Well, it's been their whole plan for a long time. I mean, they've been doing it for a while.
People aren't saying it enough. And I thought we should probably use this space to call it out. And for our listeners, like we all need to kind of do our part here and call it out. And like, it would surprise you, I think, to learn that one of your neighbors, someone down the street, is probably reading like the Miami Chronicle or the New York News Day, whatever they're called. Like we all have a role to play here in calling this out, in making sure that like the fake news doesn't stay fake. That was the point I wanted to make before we wrapped, Joe.
Well, it's also like, you know, CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times don't report any of this. I mean, they don't call any of it out. I mean, it's a failure across the board that I think, you know, to continue. And I think part of it is they still, the right wing and Trump's Russia, 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 hoax, hoax, hoax thing has made a lot of the press like want to stay away from that. We're, you know, from saying, hey, there's a Russia thing going on. And I think a lot of people, it got old, but it's very real. It's been, they've been actively pursuing it. It's part of the reason we are so divided. And it's also part of the reason that Russia talking points end up in the House of Representatives in the mouths of MAGA members of Congress. And not enough of them are called out. And it's not, I mean, I know you cite the Miami Chronicle and the New York News Daily, but they're all over the place. There are hundreds of these supposed, you know, localized sites that are just spreading propaganda that is again showing up on the right and being repeated in the House of Representatives. And it's the amplification of it by GOP leaders that really helps it spread. And gives it a bigger life here at home in terms of the divisiveness and the aid to the enemy, the Kremlin and Putin. And so, yeah, we do need to call that out. Do we have that to put in the show links?
Yeah, we'll include it this week.
Okay, cool. And yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot going on here. I mean, when we talked about the polls and, you know, can Biden get to 51 or 53 with the third parties out there? All this is, you know, it's all connected. There is a reason that a lot of Trump donors are giving to Robert Kennedy Jr. There's a reason all of a sudden there's a ton of third party possible candidates out there this year, and they're being talked about a lot and promoted a lot more. There's a reason that there are Russian talking points being repeated on the floor of the House by MAGA members of Congress. They get that Trump stuck at 45 and they got to make this race a 45-45 kind of race. And I mean, when I say they, I mean Russia knows that to get Trump, that's what they need to do. The MAGA people in Congress know that. Trump knows it. Steve Bannon knows it. That's why he spent 2 months, actually more like a couple of years promoting RFK Jr. And urging him to run for president. It's none of this is an accident. They know why he won in 2016. Russia knows why he won in 2016. Trump knows why he won. Strong third parties. And why did he lose in 2020? Weak third parties. So the disinformation is that we saw in 2016 and 2020, it's out there and it's amped up. But what they can't stop, they can't help themselves, is the chaos and the circus and just the extremism that is MAGA and Trump and where they want to take this country. They can't change that. And these guys are not capable of hiding it. Their base demands it. And they're going to keep ringing that bell over and over again in the hopes that they can get more of their base excited and turning out than Biden. And if they can get some third party voters to bleed off Biden, they know they need to do that. That's what this is all about. That's why I think that I don't agree with, I agree with Simon that we're in a much better place than Trump. I don't think we can get to 55. I do think we can get over 50. But those are some pretty damn formidable wins on the other side that are well-funded by billionaires and dark money, and to be honest, impacted by foreign governments that want us to be divided in hopes that they can, that Putin can take Ukraine and come out on top and where the U.S. is weakened. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to get, that Biden's going to get above 50. I think we're going to hold the House and gain seats there. I mean, we'll take back the House. And I do think we're going to hold the Senate now and may even pick up a seat.
Joe, I think that's a really good place to wrap for the day.
Thanks, Alex. And thanks for everyone for listening to That Trippy Show. We'll put the links to the post story in our show notes. This podcast will always be free with support from our advertisers and is part of Resolute Square. Check out the latest at resolutesquare.com/trippy. We talked about this, you know, the disinformation and Russia and everything. Part of the and those phony, you know, Miami Daily and the New York, Daily News, whatever it is. It's one of the reasons we started Resolute Square. And so you check out resolutesquare.com/trippy, because that's one of the places where we're trying to start creating a counter to all the disinformation out there, to take it on, to create our own media platforms, to do battle with the Breitbarts and the Fox Newses of the world and these phony Russian sites. So please take a look at that and think about joining Resolute Square if you get a chance. Please subscribe to That Trippy Show. Leave a review on Apple or wherever you listen. And if you're listening to this episode on YouTube, please like and subscribe to get alerts when we post the next episode. You can always send us a question to thattrippyshow@gmail.com or leave us a question in a review on iTunes. See you next week.